another day in the 50 Cents. Bob McCown, John Shannon.
Robert.
Oh, you could sound a little peppier than that. A little more enthusiastic for the audience, if not for me. Well, that was a very somber, Robert.
No, it was like it wasn't. It was more authoritarian, you know?
Well, no, I mean, I know you're highly anticipating my passing, but I'm still alive. So a little more enthusiasm would be nice.
I beg your pardon.
Brad Treliving is going to join us, the managing general of the Calgary Flames, who didn't make as many changes as I thought they would make.
I'm with you. I thought for sure that two guys in particular, and we're going to have to ask him about them, Goodrow and Monahan. I thought for sure that one of them, if not both of them, would be leaving town. Just because at a certain point, there might be a need for change, and you might be able to get something quality for them. So I just thought it was. I'm surprised to see them both on the roster as of today, as the season starts.
Look, I'm not a sabermetrician, and I pay little attention to the salary cap. I assume all teams or most teams are at it, and I know there's a lot of decisions that are made because of that. In fact, maybe more than by talent, based on talent. Mm-hmm. But you have to be surprised at Giordano. Was allowed to go. But when he was, and Seattle picked him up, I thought, well, that opens the door to, as you suggested, one of the other two big name guys to go, didn't you?
Well, I'm not sure they were synonymous, but it became quite obvious when you looked at the list of defensemen that the Calgary Flames had, that because of Giordano's age, because of the 1 year left on his contract, he was going to be the fourth defenseman. And you had a choice of taking eight skaters or seven and three.
Right.
And the three being defensemen. And so they elected to go seven and three. And so that became the issue. I mean, Brad Treliving, I don't know whether he'll tell us or not, but he tried by hook or by and crook to do a deal with Ron Francis, not to take Giordano.
Oh, I know. That's well documented. Yeah.
And Ron just asked for too much. I mean, he asked for a first round pick and a third round pick, I think. And it was just too much for the Flames to give up at this point. So unfortunately you lose a quality person, and by no surprise, Mark Giordano was named captain of the Kraken yesterday. So he's going to fill the same void that he did in Calgary, in Seattle.
And Treliving's got to find a captain too, which to the best of my knowledge, he has not yet, but we'll talk to Brad Treliving in a bit about it. I wanted to chat a bit about the breaking news, I guess, from yesterday, John Gruden gone as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Mm-hmm. And you know, the hows and the whys, well, the hows are really irrelevant here, but I'm really getting tired of people who are fired being allowed to announce that they resigned. And I am absolutely convinced that that's what happened with Gruden. Davis, the owner, went in to see Gruden, I guess, yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
And the understanding was that it was Davis who set up the meeting, not Gruden. Well, if the owner goes in to meet with his head coach over a controversial issue, the chances that the coach decided to quit is almost non-existent. He got fired, and he got fired with cause. And for those that aren't aware, it wasn't just the one email from 11 years ago that was the first thing that became public in talking about the head of the Players Association and referencing the fact that he's African-American in a derogatory way. Now, all of a sudden, a whole string of emails.
7 years of emails.
Yeah.
7 years, Bob.
Of him saying disparaging things about everybody.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of unacceptable stuff. I'll tell you the one thing that scared the hell out of me is that it apparently is that easy to track down every email you've ever sent. Like erase it all you want, but it's apparently still out there.
No, but no, the issue, Bob, was that it was on, this was a secondary part of an investigation into the Washington Football Club. And the emails that Gruden sent to a friend within the organization, within the Washington organization, they remain, if they go to an NFL team, they remain on the server. So, I mean,
well, even I get if it. It's
so that's the challenge. I mean, first of all, I can't believe anybody would be silly enough to put those types of things in an email, let alone say them publicly or say them privately. Just in this day and age, you have to be smarter. You have to be better. You have to be more diverse in your understanding of the world. Even 10 years ago, Bob, even 10 years ago, you have to be. Here's my question, though. And it's starting to come out, particularly in the last 18 hours. How did his employer at the time not know that this was the way that Gruden thought? I mean, Mike Tirico on NBC on Sunday night, who was doing Monday Night Football with Gruden at the time, said, I never knew a thing. I never knew that he felt this way. I never understood it. And I can respect Tirico for saying that. But how ESPN, who he was working for at the time, didn't get some semblance of a whiff of this was what John Gruden was, staggering.
Yeah, I understand your point. I'm not sure I buy it. I mean, you and I have worked together for years. I'll be honest with you. I don't know very much about your personal opinions on things. I'm not suggesting anything, by the way. It's just, you know, we're close, but we're not.
It's a different world. I understand that it's a different world, but you and I mean, these guys travel together. And I can tell you as a guy who's traveled most of my adult life.
No, you get to know somebody.
You get a totally different feeling.
I understand.
For a person when you travel with them for, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And that's, you certainly have a different understanding of that. The other thing you talked about was allowing Gruden to resign rather than just a single line email. John Gruden is no longer the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know. It doesn't bother me, but that to me speaks of the relationship that Mark Davis has with John Gruden, saying, Mark, or is it saying, John, I've got to get rid of you. You're gone.
Oh, 100%.
The NFL has told me that that you have to be dismissed, but I'm your friend, and I will let you do it your way. You know, so that becomes that, and I can understand that. I've seen that. We see it in our business, where you know people get dismissed, people get fired, and then the company says, "Okay, we're going to say we both made a mutual decision." You know, so that's all the nuance of.
Oh, I get it. It just drives me crazy. It just drives me crazy. It happens in sports all the time.
I think, you know, not that he needs it, not that it should happen, but it certainly looks to me like Mark Davis was trying to save a modicum of John Gruden's dignity.
Oh, I agree with you, John.
By allowing him to resign. Yeah, by allowing him to resign.
I understand. And I don't pretend to know all the specifics, and we have no way of knowing what that conversation was. It's just, it is extremely unlikely that Gruden said, I'm going to quit over this. Nonetheless, he's gone, and the Vegas football franchise will move on. And I assume that John Gruden will never be seen again. Anywhere near the National Football League.
Would you assume he's getting the remainder of his $100 million?
Not if he quit.
Well, no, but see, that's part of the magic decision between he and Davis.
Well,
And who knows, maybe there was a clause in there that I could resign at any time and I still get paid. You never know.
Yeah, that seems very unlikely to me, though. I mean, is Mark Davis the smartest?
Mark Davis pursued John Gruden for 5 years to coach.
Well, I get it.
Five years.
He's not the brightest candle on the menorah.
No.
Al didn't want to leave the football team to him. You know, and, you know, we've seen that situation many times in the past where an individual builds a company and doesn't trust his or her siblings mm-hmm. to run the company once they're done. And that was, I can tell you, absolutely, that was the case with Al Davis. Al Davis intended to sell the Oakland Raiders rather than leave it to Mark or the family. And he died before he could execute that sale. Mm-hmm. So in any event, that is sort of...
But what John Gruden's done and what John Gruden's going through is not Mark Davis's fault.
I'm not suggesting it is for the
second.
No,
I'm just saying that because, I mean, when you think about what Davis has done with the franchise, moving it to Las Vegas, you know, building that state-of-the-art stadium, getting it done with...
I applaud him for the things that he's done. And he hired a football coach, and I'm comfortable in saying that I doubt that Davis had any idea the baggage that Gruden was bringing. You didn't. I didn't. I know no one else in the media that did. I know no one else in football that really knew about it. It just surfaced. It was all done privately. And it was the dynamite that caused the explosion.
And the league, I do believe that the league was adamant that it was going to continue to leak emails to the New York Times in order to get Gruden done. I really do. Because the league was, they knew they had to get rid of him.
Did you watch any of the football game last night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Wow. That Jackson's a pretty good player.
Well, I'll tell you, he was unstoppable in the fourth quarter. Now, you know, you look at his statistics. If you didn't see the game and just looked at his stats, he had pass for over 500 yards, and I don't know, he was 40-something.
The first half was not his best football. The second half was by far his best football.
Well, no, and he completed nearly 90% of his passes. I mean, but the first half, you're right. They didn't get it done. And Indianapolis's defense.
Yeah, wow, you're old. So now, let me ask you this.
Well, that was very confusing. The old Colts against the new Ravens.
That's right. Which were the old Browns.
Yes.
So it's okay. Now, were you flipping between football and baseball, or what were you doing?
Sure I was, of course.
Yeah, boy. I had a difficult time until the Giants game came on. I am so happy Boston beat Tampa.
Really?
Because I'm a simple guy. I think the fan base appreciates winning in Boston more than the fan base does in Tampa.
Well, and hates losing more than they do in Tampa. In Tampa, yeah. I don't think they care. Anyway,
and I mean, Boston, to have Boston and Fenway and Red Sox fans involved in the next round, boy, it's going to be exciting. Well, why? Is Brad there?
Yeah, we got to take a break. Brad Treliving is going to join us after these messages. With the general manager of the Calgary Flames, Brad Treliving. Well, I think most people, I certainly, expected fairly significant change in your roster over the course of the offseason. And, I mean, there was change, but maybe not as much as I anticipated. And I think some, Brad, anticipated. Did that not work out, or was that a conscious decision on your part?
Well, I think we had a season that I would call disappointing and a season where we underachieved last year. And so you come through that, and the goal is to always try to make your team better. Change for the sake of change. You know, sometimes you do that to change up your mix. Anything that was available to us this summer didn't make ourselves better. So I made the decision as we go through it with our management team. Did we look at making some bigger changes, if you will. Sure, I think we look at everything as every team does. Ultimately, anything that was out there, we felt just it didn't make us better. And to make a move or to move somebody out of town who's making or who's a big player or a significant player in your team, just to sit here and say, you know what, look, we shook the team up. I mean, ultimately, if it doesn't feel if it doesn't make your team better, you don't feel it improves your team, then those things aren't, they're not constructive. So we certainly have added and moved some things around and changed some bodies. And I think we may be 7 or 8 new players when things get going here. But those are the things that were available to us and what we felt made sense.
Did you, you've had time to obviously analyze last season, and by, in your own words, it was a disappointment, not just for Calgary fans, but for you. What do you think happened? What do you think was the essence of the problem last year?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think we certainly our style of play. I thought there was just a real inconsistency to our game, whether it be from a team game standpoint, from a style of play, and even from an individual standpoint. We really couldn't get, number one, we couldn't get traction for any length of time. I think across the board, if you look at our top players, and every team relies on their top players, I thought there was inconsistency there. We ran into, I thought, and every team goes through some injuries. Jacob, I thought had a fantastic start to the season, to the point where, we won some games early, I think, really on the back of Jacob. He went through an injury issue midway through the season, and it took him a while to get sort of traction back and get healthy. So, I just ultimately, Bob, I think, we couldn't flatten out the ups and downs here. And, in this game, consistency is such a big, it's a big part of having success. There's going to be ups and downs, but to find that level and be steady at the rudder. And even last year, it was a sprint. And when you're chasing it, and we couldn't really string a string of games together, it makes it more difficult. So I thought having Daryl come in, I thought, at the end of the day, if you really dig into the numbers, since Daryl joined our team, it was a 500 record, but really, when you dig into it deeper, there was a lot of good things that happened. We became a top 5 team, top 6 team, I believe it was, in a lot of the defensive metrics that we look at. We weren't giving up a whole lot. We were driving possession. We had the puck a lot more. We were creating a lot more. We didn't finish. But I thought there was a lot of things that we did that if you do that over a longer stretch of period of time, more often than not, you have success. So,
right.
That's the goal of this team, to get back to being a consistent club on a nightly basis.
Your biggest change last year, obviously, was Daryl. So your off season, how did Daryl's involvement change the way you constructed your team?
Well, I think you got to be careful of just saying, okay, here's the coach. You got to get doing everything that just fits with the coach. Obviously, we've got a style of play that we think we need to play at. I think there was some players that we brought in that certainly Daryl had a background with, but certainly filled up some areas that we felt we needed to address. And that's really on the, a lot of it is we needed to shore up our penalty killing. And I think we needed a little bit more. I talk about experience, but people that have gone through sort of the playoff wars and some players that know what to expect with this coach. Obviously, we were a team that faced a real dilemma when it went into the expansion draft. with our back end, and we looked at different avenues there. We tried desperately not to lose Mark, but ultimately, you know, we didn't have an option that made sense to us. So we've tried to, you know, construct and add some length, some size to our defense. So certainly, I guess to answer the question, John, you know the style of play that the coach wants to play. We certainly tried to, you know, find some players that we felt would be comfortable in that style and that would fit well with the style that Daryl likes to play.
On the topic of Giordano, wouldn't be no surprise to you that Seattle made him the captain yesterday. How do you fill that void? I mean, this guy looked like a lifer. I mean, and I'm certainly not a criticism, because I mean, numbers are numbers and the CBA is a CBA and expansion's expansion, but how do you fill the void of Mark Giordano?
Well, you have to move forward. It's twofold really with Mark. It's the on ice piece. He still plays a lot of minutes, all situations. And then it's the off-ice piece. As he said, he was named captain in Seattle, which is not a shock. Was one of the best captains I've ever been around. The way he carries himself, the impact he has on teammates. I don't think you replace it with one person, right? You're not going in and saying, okay, Mark's gone, so everything falls on this player. I mean, on the ice, we've got to get contributions. We've got to get younger players that continue to mature, and the Hannafins and the Andersons and the Valimakis and the Shillingtons. And then we brought in some new people that, are, you know, hopefully can take a bite at a certain situations, whether that be penalty kill or whatnot. So to me, the on-ice contribution has got to be spread around, and you're getting contributions, and you need a little bit more from everybody, and it's a group effort off the ice. Again, some of the people that we brought on was with an eye towards, you know, people that have strong leadership abilities in their background, that have been through playoff battles, have won cups. And we think that's an area that they contribute to. And really, from a leadership standpoint, I look at it as a group, you know, from a group perspective, not necessarily one person, but our leadership group, and having more people contribute in that area. So there's not one person that's going to fill Mark's void. He certainly will be missed, but we need a little bit from everybody else to make up for it.
I'm intrigued by the process of making those kinds of decisions, because I'm sure it was extremely difficult, as you've alluded to, and you did make effort to figure out a way to try and extricate that decision from the process from your decision making. But does it come down to age at one point? I mean, Mark's what, 36, I think now. You know, if he's 30 years old,
he just turned 38.
38. There you go. I mean, how much, in the eyes of a general manager, how much does that chronological number matter?
Well, I think you take it all in, Bob. Like, number one is Mark, you know, regardless of age, I still think he's a really, you know, he's a terrific NHL player. He's a top NHL player still. So you look at the situation and say, okay, based on the expansion rules, you know, you can protect three guys. And in my mind, we had a real good top four, and that included Mark. So you have Chris Tanev, who is, we had just brought in here, coming off a real good year. And there's a significant age difference between him. You've got two young players, Rasmus Anderson and Noah Hannafin, I think, are both 24 respectively. So, you know, you look at all options, whether that's to, how do you keep Mark here? And, you know, one of it is to deal directly with Seattle, and we couldn't come to an agreement where it made sense for us. And then you look at other options, and you know, ultimately you come down as we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, making moves. We didn't feel there was one right here that made a whole lot of sense. Ultimately, you're going to lose a player in expansion. We didn't want it to be Mark, but you know, making another move or two, and putting and moving a younger player right now probably didn't make a whole lot of sense for now or in the future either. So difficult situation. And like I said, we certainly tried everything to keep Mark here, and now that didn't happen. We got to move forward.
Your roster is now set. Well, all the rosters are set. Tough decisions, more than usual, less than usual this year.
Sorry, Bob.
Your roster is now set, as all the rosters are set. So, would you say this was a tough year in terms of those final decisions, or was it a little more obvious that perhaps?
Well, you always want to have tough decisions. And I think we've got like a lot of people. Unfortunately, we had some injuries. We had our first round pick from 2 years ago, Connor Zari, who spent a lot of time here this summer training and got off to looked real good in rookie camp. He broke his ankle and he's going to miss, he's missed all the training camp now, and we'll miss some time starting the year. So, between that, we've had some injuries with the NHL players. We've had Blake Coleman is going to be suspended for the first game. So that puts, what it does is creates some roster issues and some cap issues to start with. So you have to address the roster accordingly. The good news is you always want to have tough decisions, and you want people pushing for jobs. And we did have that. We have, starting the year here right now, we've got a young player in Glenn Godden who's made the opening day roster here, and deservedly so after his preseason. And then we had, some real good competition at all positions. We're going to start with 8 defensemen. We continue to see the progression of Yusuf Alamaki, Oliver Shillington. Both had really good preseasons and took some steps. Walker Dewar is a young player we signed out of college last year. Expectations, I probably didn't have very many of him coming into camp. He pushed right till the end. So you want to have those, you want to have tough decisions to make at the end. We did. But a lot of it, Bob, was a little bit focused around our current situation. We've got a couple injuries, at least to start the season, and a suspension to deal with, and you got to account for it on the cap.
Hey, Brett, how much pressure on Johnny and Sean Monahan and Goodrow? Any more than ever?
No, I think there's, first of all, there's always pressure in this business, regardless of who you are. When you're a top player, I think that goes with the territory, John. Those are good players. They've been very productive, good players their entire career. Sean's coming off off-season surgery, really battled a hip issue most of, basically all of last year. Got that addressed. We shut him down at the end of the year. He got that addressed. Is feeling really good. Looked good in camp. But when you're a top player, listen, we lean on him no different than every other team leans on their top players. And for us to have success, you need everyone. No question. And the way we're built, we're not going to rely on one or two people, but certainly from an offensive standpoint, those guys are very, very important players for us.
Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames, is with us. Take a quick break and come back after these messages. Bob McCallum, it's John Shannon, and Brad Treliving, the GM of the Calgary Flames, is with us. What do you expect from Blake Coleman? I mean, this is a guy who, had a significant role in Tampa, and you guys went out and got him. But quite often when that kind of thing happens, the anticipation is that you, the Flames, are going to elevate his profile within your organization from what he was doing in Calgary. And that can sometimes be dangerous. What do you expect from him?
Well, you know what, Bob, I talked a lot with Blake here, since signing him and through a camp. And I think it's a good point. Sometimes those players, when you sign a contract and you come into a new team and there's expectations and you're in a Canadian market, it's heightened even more. We signed Blake for the player he is, not for anything other than that. And so he just needs to come in and be Blake Coleman. And what we expect from him is a guy who's got as good a two-way game as there is. You know, to me, he's plays hard on both sides of the puck, brings speed, brings a lot of tenacity, a highly, highly competitive player. And this guy's, you know, he's a 20 goal scorer in this league on a regular basis, has pushed more earlier, you know, in his time in New Jersey. And we think he can touch a lot of parts to the game. Like, he's certainly a guy who, you know, he can play with good players. He can play against good players, a top end penalty killer, you know, a guy who plays in key situations. So that's all we're asking him for, is to come in and not be anything that he's not, not try to, you know, be something new. He just has to come in and be Blake Coleman that, you know, we've watched over his career, and that'll be plenty enough for us. And, you know, he's versatile, can play all three forward positions. So we're highly, highly competitive player and a real good two-way player.
How much of Coleman would you say was what he did in Jersey versus that splash he had for the last 2 years in Tampa?
Well, it's really watching him his whole career, John. Like, he, you know, he probably played a little bit different role. People talk about him being a third line, you know, you put lines on people, third line player in Tampa. Well, that line really played, you look at their minutes, they played against every top line. It was, you know, they were some nights north of 19, 20 minutes. So I thought they were a really important line. He can do multiple jobs. But as you said, even in New Jersey, he was relied on a little bit more to provide offense. But I think his style of game is going to fit really well with us. You know, the fact that he's done the last two springs, you know, in terms of, you know, he's gone the distance the last 2 years, the experience that he brings with that, having gone through those experiences. You know, and just a real solid person off the ice. So I think he's going to contribute a lot to our organization. But again, we just need him to come out and be Blake Coleman, not put a whole lot of pressure. He's got to be one of the people, one of the players in our team. He'll drive the bus for us. But you know, that's our expectation for us.
How satisfying was it for you to know that here's a guy, American born, played in the Sun Belt, actually wanted to come and play in Canada, wanted to get into the hotbed of hockey to enjoy and to thrive in his career?
Yeah, it was an interesting process. Yeah, it was, John. It was an interesting process because you know, his background, he's from Texas. Obviously, it's been, you know, really his career, you know, in out east. Talked a lot about the role we see him fitting in and even the lifestyle. I know as things started moving, you know, to a conclusion, certainly the contract plays a role in any free agent signing, but I know they spent a lot of time talking about the lifestyle, coming out to Alberta. That was something that was really attractive to them. You know, both of them are from Texas. And, you know, sort of the wide open spaces. And we talked a lot about, you know, the lifestyle in Calgary. So that was very attractive. And Blake did his homework. I know he talked to a lot of people that he knew throughout the league and players that have played here, people that have worked here. So to be able to get that finalized and get him here, we were certainly excited to add him.
Well, he'd certainly be familiar with cowboy hats. Which are prominent where you are. So maybe that helped a little bit. It is Texas. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it ain't Texas, but it's almost as close as you can get. Let me throw this in a slightly different direction. You guys played, what, 8 preseason games?
We did.
Last year you played none. Under normal circumstances, we would be sitting here and we wouldn't there wouldn't be a debate about how many preseason games is the right number. But there were none played last year. And what I can tell you is I really didn't notice a significant difference when the regular season started, at least from a visual standpoint. I mean, I know there was. I know the guys weren't quite in that peak shape. But have you thought a little bit about this, about how many games you actually need to play, preseason games?
Certainly. I mean, there's, and that's, you're always looking at that, Bob. I think, you know, there's a balance of getting the preseason, you know, you're a slave to many masters, right? So you look at it and there's, you know, number one, there's the NHLers, the guys that you know are going to be on your team. They're sort of getting reps. They're knocking the rust off and they're sort of getting their legs under them. You know, then there's those, that group of players that maybe have just entered the league that are still, you know, it's important for them or where they're going to play on the team. You know, they may be on the team, but you know, what role, and are they going to get specialty tee times, and where do they fit in terms of the roster and line combinations, that. And then certainly there's young players that are trying to make an impression. You know, those guys that are coming up that the coaching and management may know from their amateur careers. And now they're trying to get, the coaches are trying to get to know them, right? So you always go through that evolution of preseason where early on you've got a lot of young people in the lineup and you've got a lot of young lineups. And the more, you know, as you progress into the preseason, the lineups become more and more veteran. And then ultimately, too, a piece of this is the business part of the game. There is revenue to be drawn from preseason. So there's a few, you know, from purely a team building standpoint, you know, usually I would say, and it, depending on if guys are coming back from injuries and whatnot, but I would say on most part of those veteran guys, if they get three games, four games, probably max is where most of those guys fall out. And, you know, then from a coaching standpoint, usually those last couple of games, you're trying to get your team game in order and trying to get as much of your roster together as you can, as you look at lines and pairs and those types of things. Ours was a little bit, you know, and you ultimately from the manager, your number one goal for preseason is get through it healthy. And then hopefully done a whole lot of evaluation. And, you know, we weren't completely healthy getting through it, but hopefully we're not going to be nothing too long-term.
But at the end of the day, if I had to say to you, if I put you on the spot and said, what's the ideal number of preseason games? Like as a GM, in terms of the things that you have to focus on during those preseason games, the decisions that have to be made, extraneous from the workouts, from the practices, like is there a number that would be ideal? Like, do you need to play more than four? Forget the economics too.
I think you do, Bob, just because again, some of those you don't, you know, just to get evaluation of players, right? You know, to accomplish all right, everything that you want to accomplish early on, you're getting those first. We didn't, our first three games, it was really all of a young lineup in there. Then you get the veteran guys in there. So you're probably, you know, between, you know, probably 5 to 8 is, you know, 8 might be pushing it, 5. And again, depending on how they sort itself out, you're trying not to play people back to back. But I think probably that sweet spot's in that 6 range.
More importantly, Brad, you got to get back to the prospects tournament in Penticton. Come on.
Very good point, John. And hopefully that is on the, that's on the agenda for next year. Of all the things that, you know, got pushed to the side here over the last year and a half, that one was really unfortunate. It's really good to be in the Okanagan anytime.
Well, for the record, I'm blaming the two guys that were raised in Penticton, Treliving and Nicholson, for ruining it. So I'm going to do that.
That's probably a good place to start.
Hey, how many games do you think Jacob Markstrom is going to have to play?
I was just going to ask that. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I never get too much into that use because, you know, everybody will say, you know, okay, what's the magic number? Ultimately, listen, you don't want to burn a guy out, but at the end of the day, you want to win games. You know, I always say there's a great number that you write in pencil, but if the, you know, if it all doesn't match up, you need to win a game, and he's the best option to win a game. The pencil gets erased pretty quickly. You know, Jacob's used to carrying a lot of workload. I think that's something that he wants. We've, you know, we've brought Dan Vladar in here, and he's a young guy, but, you know, really encouraged how his preseason went. But I mean, listen, you can't, I think the days of a guy, you know, back in the day when they were playing 70 plus, those days are long gone. But at the end of the day, he's our workhorse, and he's going to play a lot. To put a number on it, I don't know right now, but, you know, we're going to try to get him the rest when he needs it throughout the year, whether that's certain practice days. And part of it's going to be seeing how Dan progresses. You know, You need two goaltenders in this league, and we think we've got a real good one in Jacob, and we think Dan is at that stage in his career where he's been a really, really good American League goaltender, and now this is his opportunity to jump in it. So it's a real nice way of sidestepping to say, I don't know that number, but we've got to find a balance of knowing Jacob is a real, real good goaltender, but also making sure that we keep him upright this year and not overdo it.
Would it surprise you if he played more minutes than any other goalie in the league? Not that you've studied all of the 31 other teams, but to me, it looks like he might play more minutes than any other goalie in the league.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I certainly, you know, to me, that means he's been healthy and he's been playing well. So I suspect he'd be up there.
For living, Shannon has heard this speech before, so he'll probably just nod off here. But I think all you hockey guys are nuts that a goaltender can't play 82 games. And I won't go through the whole scenario, but I can't understand. I've never heard a rational explanation why a goaltender needs more rest than a defenseman who plays 26, 28 minutes a night, or a forward who plays 24 minutes a night and is skating all the time. A goaltender, for the most part, is standing there. Maybe he's going up and down a few times. I was a target when I played many, many, many years ago.
Yeah,
you
George Vezina was at the other end.
Can't get tired. It's not possible. And you guys have all decided that goaltenders are somehow the weakest link in the chain and need to get rest. Play if Markstrom's your best goaltender, Treliving, play him every night. Damn it. I'd love you for it.
You know what, Bob? And I don't disagree. Now, having said that, it's there's a physical tag. And I can speak to it more so in the West, where you have travel. The travel is significantly different than the East.
If you don't ask the goaltender to carry his own equipment around with him onto the plane, then what the hell's the difference between a goaltender and a defenseman?
Well, there is a mental strain that goes with it. There's a physical strain that goes with it, but I agree with you. And the investment you make in these guys, ultimately it is the most important position on the ice.
Sure.
And you know, we're fortunate, as they all are. You know, if you ask Jacob, he'd like to play every game, but you have to manage that a little bit. But sometimes I do think you got to be careful. Again, the idea of everybody coming out and say this guy can only play X amount of games before the end of the year. Well, most times they haven't coached before, and you're sitting here saying, well, you got to win this game. And it's like pitch count, you know, the guy's only supposed to throw 80 pitches. Well, if you need one more out and he's pitching really well, he's probably going to pitch 81, I think. So you have to manage it. You have to manage them, you know, as we talked about sort of the game numbers. But to me, a lot of the times it's your off days and it's your practice time and those things that you can manage too. But, you know, when you got a big guy like that that wants to run, I got no problem trotting him out there.
Here's what I'm praying, Treliving. You play him 82, you win the Stanley Cup, and it changes everything for everybody else. Because that's the way sports works.
There you go.
It's monkey see, monkey do. Ain't it? You know, if it worked for him, maybe it'll work for me.
Oh, I love it. It's great. You know, Brad, it doesn't matter what sport, because Bob's had this same speech about starting pitching in Major League Baseball too.
Well, I'll give you that one too if you want.
No, it's okay. But Brad only needs to worry about hockey these days. He only needs to worry about hockey. So handicap your division, Brad. Handicap your division. Where do you think you are You lose Arizona, you pick up Seattle. The California teams are basically rebuilding. Where do you think you sit in the Pacific?
Well, it's interesting. We were talking about this the other day, and I was talking to a few other guys. It feels like forever since we've seen the other teams in the division. You know,
it has been.
We've gone through, you know, the world all stopped, and then we went to the bubble in Edmonton, and then we had the Canadian division last year. You know, at times last year, it felt like we were operating in four different leagues than anything else. So I think, obviously, you know, I think it's going to be really competitive. You know, you look at to me, Vegas obviously has got a hell of a team. You look at, you know, up north here in Edmonton and you know, that's a top team with, you know, arguably the two best players on the planet. But I also look at it, Seattle, you know, Seattle's, I think Ronnie's done a real good job. They're going to be a tough out. But though, you know, everybody talks about rebuilding and all the rest of it, those teams all have really good young players. I think they're all well coached. I think they've got top end talent, and we've seen in this league, you know, the days of guys needing 3 or 4 years to mature, guys can come into this league and have a real big impact. And those are top young players in all those teams. And there's veteran players that have won. So I think the division is going to be really, really competitive. Quite frankly, a lot of the teams outside the Canadian teams, like us in Edmonton and Vancouver, Vancouver is a real good team. The top end talent on their team, the changes they've made. So I think it's going to be real competitive. It's going to be a challenge for all of us each and every night. And it's, as I said earlier, it's kind of sort of reacquainting yourself and learning a little bit more about the teams that you haven't seen in what seems like a long time. But, you know, our focus right now is ourselves. We've got our work cut out for us, and ultimately we get going here. We can get our team together soon and continue to build as we go each week through this.
Before we let you go, I don't want to sound stupid, but you haven't named a captain yet, have you?
No, we have not.
Is it your plan to do that? Or would you be comfortable in not having a captain? It's not unheard of.
Yeah, it's not unheard of. We've you know, we haven't talked at the beginning of the training camp, we talked publicly about it, that it wasn't really the most important thing on our list right now. Daryl and I have talked a lot about it, you know, and we're going to sort of let this evolve over training camp. And I think, you know, we've had some discussions over the last few days. I guess the answer is we'll see. You know, the biggest thing for us, Bob, was making sure that we've got a leadership group of guys that have got experience in this league, have got experience in big moments. We do have that, you know, it's something we're going to spend a little bit more time on, and we'll see where we get to in the course of the next week.
It should be noted, Bob, you know, Calgary did win the Stanley Cup in 1989. They didn't have a captain. They had three guys. They had three different guys that were the, it was called the tri-captain system, I think, that they had invented in Calgary in the 1989 season. So and when Boston won the cup in the early 70s, they didn't really have a captain. So it's not necessarily the thing that has to happen.
Well, I think it's
a leadership group, right? One,
yeah, when you've got one, and we have, exactly. And we've had one here for a long time in Mark, and we talked about him earlier and the great job that he did. But it also has got to, you know, you don't just name a captain to name a captain. You know, it's got to, it's important, but it's really important to me. Leadership isn't a one person job. You need a lot of leaders on your team, and you need good followers, and you need, as you said, a leadership group that, you know, is going to guide the ship and push it in the right direction and work with the coaching staff. So I feel really comfortable about that. Like, I do think we've got a lot of people in our group, you know, veteran players, but also young veterans, guys that have, you know, still young players would have been in the league that have great leadership qualities. So we'll get that sorted out and make the right decision.
We're going to let you go. The only piece of advice I can give you, Treliving, is play Markstrom every night. He's not going to die. You won't kill him. and your team will be better. And more importantly, you'll teach all those other stupid general managers that, you know, there's no, there shouldn't be a limit to a goaltender. There you go.
Yeah, we'll run that one downstairs and we'll get back to you.
Yeah. Yes, I know. And I think I know Daryl's answer, and it's maybe one or two words.
Yeah, well.
Well, it might be. Listen, Daryl, if you look at Daryl's track record, he's probably his thinking's not far off, Bob's. And
thank you.
Yeah. Like you said, when you got a big dog, you run him as hard as you can.
Hear, hear. Listen, we wish you the best of luck this year, and we're going to lay off you for a while, but hopefully you'll come back somewhere during the season. We'll chat some more, get an update.
We're going to be all over him, Bob. We're going to be all over him.
Well, always a pleasure, guys. Look after yourselves. Stay safe. Good seeing you.
And you too.
Back down the road.
All the best. Have a good year.
Thanks, guys. Thanks,
Brad. Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. John and I will be back after this. And we are back. Our thanks to Brad Treliving, the managing general of the Calgary Flames. And we have no more time for any more chit-chat, John.
John Gibbons tomorrow.
Gibby. Well, we'll see what he thought. Well, of course, things may change by tomorrow. Things will change by tomorrow. The former manager of the Blue Jays tomorrow on the program. We hope you'll join us either in the podcast form or on SiriusXM. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, see you.